This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of, the podcast where we explore the struggles of life, the challenges of mental health and recovery, and the spaces between. We express our personal views on life here, and this podcast is not meant to replace medical advice or tell anyone the right way to live. This podcast is best used as a place of curiosity and questioning to accompany you on your journey. Be aware there is strong language. Here we go. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing all right now that we're sitting down here doing this and I'm not carrying Christmas shit around the house. So yeah, I get here this morning. We come into our little room where we record, which is in my mother's house, right? Thank you, Mom, for letting me borrow your room. But she has, since I've last been here and recorded, loaded it up with boxes of Christmas stuff. And you know, my first reaction was like irritation. Like, fuck, this shit's going to be in the background of the videos, this, that, and the other. So I was like, oh, and this is funny because I just told somebody yesterday that I don't really enjoy passive aggressiveness, but I texted her and was passive aggressive. And I was like, what did I say?
Skill set you probably learned from childhood.
Yeah. It was a great coping skill. It was a way to be heard. You know what I mean? I didn't have many of those. So that was...
Mine's sarcasm. But
okay, yeah. So I texted her and I was like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but your office is the background of my video podcast, you know? And she's like, oh my God, I'm sorry. You know, there's more space in the spare bedroom now, but they're really heavy boxes. Could you move them down there for me? And I'm like, yeah, I will, because I want them out of the way. But yeah, I started thinking about it while I was carrying them around, right? And I'm like, is this the story of my life, right? Right? Like, are these, and I keep wanting to overestimate when I say how many of these heavy Rubbermaid containers full of Christmas stuff. I don't have to describe them. If you have parents, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know, maybe 10, 12 of them, and they're heavy. And this Christmas stuff is the stuff that was important when I was little, right? Mm. Like, I wanted to be important, but the Christmas stuff was. And, like, I don't want to carry the Christmas stuff around anymore, right? Like, the Christmas stuff is more important than whether I feel like carrying it around, whether I have the energy or motivation to carry it around. Like, I've had to move it up here when we just moved my mom up here not that long ago. Yeah. Like, now it's getting unpacked from the shed. Like, everything about Christmas decorations, even though I'm not a Scrooge, by the way, I love driving around and looking at people's Christmas decorations with my kids and shit. But like everything about that process to me is like, I don't know. It just seems to sum up the way I've felt. Like, this is the important stuff, these Christmas decorations. And like, I'm just here to protect them and not break them and put them up and down and put them away and fuck that Christmas decorations.
Yeah,
man.
Now you're the server of the Christmas. Yeah. You serve them, they're the master.
Right. Huh. So maybe that's where we start with the story of my life. I tried to put together some shit to like remember what the fuck my life was. Don't know how well I did with that, but we'll see. I'm a person that doesn't feel like I have a very good memory of anything ever. You know, I know we're learning in science and therapy and everything. Like, when you're in survival mode, you have less access to be able to store and recall and remember because it's more of a moment to moment, you know, hypervigilance around the danger cues than it is anything else that's going on around it. So I don't know how much that plays into what I don't remember, or just I'm a guy that didn't pay much attention, or who knows, right?
And go for I think it. There's something like in like when we have done this or when I've done work on like my past or anything, I've recognized an interesting thing there with memory.
Okay.
So one, I know that memory is fallible. Like I used to think it wasn't, but now I'm 100% sure that it is.
Yeah.
And not only that,
all the time,
until I either say it out loud or write it out or talk to someone or someone challenges me, like my wife will say, well, you used to say this and now you say that. I'm like, right. That's fucking interesting. Like I don't, and to back to the life thing, like I remember with my dad having issues, you know, with my dad being like, oh, he worked all the time. He wasn't really around. He wasn't really available. But then I have distinct memories of him being at the Little League field and like umpiring games or being there. But the narrative I've told myself is he was never there.
Hmm.
But then I have memories that he specifically was there and he'll talk about being there. So it's like, which one is reality? But what I've recognized is that story that I tell myself is the one that matters. I mean, that's the one that I need to
that I'm operating
work on.
With, right. No, and I think that's hugely important. When you talk about memory, I completely agree with you. From what I understand and read in science, like basically we really don't know what the fuck we saw or did or heard or any of that. Yeah. And it's all very skewed. And in my mind, it all points to I've been speaking an emotional narrative my whole life, and we've all been looking at it as if we were talking about the real world, right? When I say my father wasn't there, he emotionally wasn't there.
Right.
Doesn't matter how close proximity his body was to mine, you know what I mean? And like, the more I'm learning is our whole lives are based in this, whatever you want to call it, emotional, spiritual place inside us, and that's what we're all talking about and describing, and that's why we can't agree on a truth.
Yeah.
Because we're all speaking from a place of how we feel and not what we actually see in the world.
Right.
That's all interpreted through the lens of what we're looking for.
Yeah, and I'm sure your generation, my generation, might be getting slightly better now, but your feelings didn't matter as a kid.
No.
Like you weren't. No. In fact, you were just supposed to do what you're supposed to do, at, you know.
My feelings.
Show up when you're supposed to show up.
Were something for my parents to fix. Like, and I don't mean fix like...
nurture and
right. They were like, he's fucking broken and he's not gonna make it in the world and we better fix that shit.
You're crying, you better stop that. I'll give you something to cry about.
Yes. Looking at it now, and I'm not we can parent blame if we want to do that. We can also blame me for the way I parented my kids, because we'll get to that part of my story, but that's pretty ugly what I repeated. For me, it feels like now that what my parents and what I was trying to do, we saw a flaw in this child, right? And we saw how harsh the world had met us, right? And we said, oh my God, that'll never work. We got to prepare them better. And we did that by trying to toughen them up, right? Get them ready for the real world. And then we sent them out there. And like, I get that idea, but looking back now, what I became was the fucking person being the tormentor.
Right.
Instead of just being able to remain the soft landing spot for when the world did meet him like an asshole.
Yeah. Well, you know? And not, I mean, just with our parents, that's a cultural thing too. Because there's also, that's the messaging that we got in schooling. Like, schooling wasn't a place where you were taught about emotions and shit. It was like, do this work, do this homework. Oh, I don't care what's going on in your home life. Doesn't matter if you're, parents are getting divorced, your dad's an alcoholic, you're fucking whatever. Like, you got homework to do, and that's what's important.
Right.
And so that's the messaging we get from society, you know, as children. You know, you're supposed to show up, you're supposed to do, you need to do X amount of activities, you know.
Right.
When you get into high school, oh, you want to go to college? Well, you got to play sports, you got to do extracurricular activity. You mean, oh, you don't like that? Well, doesn't matter if you want to go to college. These are the things you have to do.
Well, yeah, and
it's
the
bizarre
assumption there, like the assumption that all my 30 second graders, right, their home lives are probably all great. You know, none of them are getting beat or anything, but we'll be strict. And why can't you keep up with the work, right? We'll never assume that, like, maybe it's rough at night. Or
even just the vague assumption that 30, 10-year-olds are all emotionally at the same place.
Right.
that they're all, you know, physically and emotionally developed the same, because right. you look at their sizes and you know the fuck they're not. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, and what some are been, little tiny kids, yeah. some are at the verge of puberty, right. like, you know.
And what kind of stuff have they been exposed to in their house? How many older right. siblings do they have and are in proximity to? Like,
yeah. So anyway, getting all that back to your story, the fun part of me telling my story, and I hope this is what comes out for you, mm-hmm. is the reflection on some of that stuff and some of the narratives, looking at some of the narratives I've told myself, where I've gotten in my life now is it doesn't even 100% matter whether they're true or not. It's like, this right. is the stories that I've told myself. This is the foundation on which I've built my life. Now, what can I do to heal those things mm-hmm. or make them better or move forward from that? So I hope this comes out as a kind of therapeutic thing for you. Maybe I had never done anything like really laid out my story like that. So it was kind of fun.
I can think of one time along the way where the goal was something like this in an actual 12-step variety. In one of the programs I attended, this was kind of how they worked their first step, was to write out their life history generally. And it was interesting.
I did a really brief one in my first go around through the steps. And then I kind of now think that's more like what a fourth step is supposed to be, although that's not what it's come out to be. We right. get hung up on the word moral inventory, and so we throw out all your emotions again.
Yeah.
Like, but anyway.
Okay. So, you know, the old joke, I was born at a young age, of course. I don't know much about this. I was born in Baltimore City, obviously. You don't even get really narrative memory, which is like where you have a story because you have words to put a story together. You don't get that until you're at least four, so I don't have any of that until mm-hmm. four. The things
were your parents okay. like picture people, like, do you have pictures of being a kid or family events
yeah,
and things
yeah,
like
we
that?
Got some family photograph books. In fact, I think some of them might be right behind you over there, Billy.
Start pulling them out, start
albums.
Flashing
yeah,
up photos.
I mean, you can feel free to glance through if you want. I know there's one with me and my dad in a train. But yeah, so what I can remember of people telling me, I was told the story, and I was told this very young, elementary school, early elementary school, often enough that I knew it, that I was a tough child. I never slept. That was the words, never slept. You know, I would get like maybe an hour of sleep a night, and I kept my parents up all the time, and they were going crazy, and they wanted to take me to somebody to have me tested to see if I was possessed. That's the fucking story.
Yeah.
I actually told a kid in elementary school that my parents took me to the doctor and tested me for being possessed when I was a baby, to which they told me that was bullshit. And then I found out that, you know, that wasn't an actual thing you could get tested for. So that was embarrassing. Thanks, Mom, for telling me the bullshit story. Anyway. Yeah. So like, that's my first interpretation of myself yeah. without memory, was that I was told I was really difficult, and I cried, and I was never satisfied. Now, was that like the trailer for the story of my life being a big whiny baby? I don't know, maybe, yeah. right?
Well, but did that stick with you? Because I was told I was similar. I was colicky as a baby,
fussy.
And very difficult, and all that stuff. And I never, like, that isn't the thing that stuck with me from my childhood. But I heard someone the other day talking about exactly this kind of thing. It's like someone had said, oh, your parents told you this and that's so terrible. And the lady kind of said, she said, my parents told me all kinds of shit, and like 90% of it I didn't listen to at all, and it didn't stick. But some things, for whatever reason, I decided to make reality.
Man, that's taking a lot of ownership over.
Yeah,
that shit.
Well, she was talking about, as an adult, how do you find your way back to your dreams and back to, you know, freedom from, what do they call that, limiting beliefs and
right,
stuff like
right.
that. And instead of blaming people for what's going on, you just accept and move forward. Anyway, that
okay.
was what she was talking about.
That's
but
fine.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the fact that I still remember it, like, I don't remember much, you know, so I'm assuming anything I remember must have some kind of significance.
For sure.
I think it's an interesting way to introduce a person to themselves, you know? Like, hey, this was your beginnings. You were fucking awful. It's like, yeah, that's how it stinks, right?
I say that about my daughter. Sorry.
Yeah. So my parents both worked at a phone company. My mother had a daughter from a previous relationship. She was in a physically abusive relationship before my father ended up divorced. But like what I know from like therapy and patterns in life, like you don't generally just leave an abusive relationship and get in a healthy one, right? You get into a different kind of abusive one or a similar kind of abusive one. So there's some context for meeting my father. And then my father, his fucking story is a mess. He grew up really super poor with like five brothers and like didn't want to go to school but one day a week because that was the only day he had clothes to wear, and like didn't want to walk up the steps because people could see the holes in the bottom of his shoes, like that kind of poor. And then like dude dropped out of school in like eighth grade or ninth grade and got in the military at 16 because he got somebody pregnant. And then I don't know, apparently came home from the military and his brother and his father had slept with his wife while he was in fucking Korea. What a fucking mess, right? So he had that, and then he had another divorce with no children. So I showed up. I got a stepsister, half sister, 7 years older than me, who is sometimes part of my family household. And then apparently a brother that is 16 years older than me who I don't meet until much, much later.
That was your dad's first
kid? My dad had a son. My mother had a daughter. And here we are.
And I guess neither of them were in the house with you guys when you grew up?
My sister, sometimes. It was a very volatile situation. You know, there was supposedly agreements in place and that would last for a short amount of time and then it would get all whacked out and somebody would not give her back and that would go on for a while and then it would be back to normal. And I, you know, I'm sure there was like courts and police and shit involved in all that, but I wasn't privy to all that.
As a kid, you don't know anything about it.
So my mother took off, you know, for maternity to be with me until I was like three. I think she was like daycare and other kids to help, you know, pay or whatever. And my father was still working. And then he got laid off when I was three. And then my mother went back to work and he stayed at home. But some shit happened in there between like those years. he struggled with depression. I don't know all the stories. I know he was hospitalized for a suicide attempt at one point in my first 4 years ish. I know when he got laid off, he like, you know, became the stay at home dad and got that kind of stuff done. Like I got up and got to school and shit, but generally I don't think anything else got done for years. Like,
yeah, I imagine school. We're talking the '80s and it was not near probably as socially acceptable as it is now. And growing up, if he was military and had all that mentality, there's a lot of,
so he's sitting at home with shame there. You know? So all that, that's the story. Right. Mm. And so elementary school, he walked me to school every day and came and walked me home every day. And like, I mean, he was my buddy in a lot of ways, which was an amazing thing because he did have a lot of love for me. You know, that's kind of the amazing parts.
Hmm. And like, it's not to cut you off right there, but it's the similarities between, it's like you're, and it's funny, we're the opposites in a lot of ways. It's like your dad was that upbringing, that stuff was very similar to my mom in a lot of ways. It's so weird. And like my mom, same with the really, you know, poor family and the chaos, and it wasn't her specifically, but like her oldest brother, her father left her mother with her oldest brother's wife and they went off and got married and had kids. So now she's got, you know, I don't know what you call that, you know, siblings from her sister-in-law. Like it's just like
my dad would tell stories about him and his brother that was a year older than him. Like when they were teenagers, they moved out because everything was so fucking poor in the house. It was cheaper to support yourself out of the house than it was to live there and try to support everybody else too.
Yeah.
And they talk about sharing cans of dog food with ketchup on it. You know what I mean? Like,
And see, my mom would never open up quite that much about most of her childhood. Most of what I know about it came from some of my aunts. My mom just said they were very poor. Her father was an alcoholic. He was abusive physically, sexually, you know, just a horrible human being. And that was as much as we'd ever get out of my mom. She would be like, well, fuck that son of a bitch.
Dude.
You know, we'll never meet him. I don't ever want, you know, you'll never know him.
Incest and abuse runs fucking rampant in poverty.
Yeah.
And if you talk to people, you will find that out. Yeah. Like, whole fucking communities think that is the norm. The children growing up think everybody goes through that because most of them are. It's fucking crazy that we live in this world, that we allow that shit to just be.
Yeah, and the emotional toll that that takes on people, you know. Like, for a long time, I used that as an like, for my mom, I would be like, well, gosh, she's doing 10 times better than what she grew up in. Like, she never abused us or anything, maybe not physically, but,
right,
you know.
Right.
But that was the justification. It's like, look what she grew up in, and look how much better. She, and I'm sure that was for her, too, but, you know.
Yeah,
it's tough, man. But I know she loved me, and I know that she would have done anything she could to help me. She was my biggest defender, you know, biggest protector, and yet...
It's the most beautiful thing and the most painful thing at the same time, because if they did not love me so much, it wouldn't have fucking crushed me so much, you know? It's because that I meant so much to them that it hurt so much every time they did what they did, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure my father being laid off, you know, not feeling worthy, feeling like a stay-at-home dad who's not manly enough, where in the 80s it was, you know, commonplace to make fun of the gays and the sissy men in every goddamn movie you had, right? Like, this was a different time and place, and I'm sure he fucking hated himself, you know? Yeah, he was angry, man. We know these kind of links a lot more now. Like you said, in the 80s, this wasn't really common knowledge, but anger, depression, like, it's ugly. So that's what the house was like. It was calm than not, you know? It was explosive. It was, who the fuck did the thing, and what was it today, and what little thing was done wrong and not the way Dad wanted it that caused everybody to be miserable, you know, or the house to be quiet, or me to sit at the top of the stairs and hear mom and dad screaming at the bottom of the stairs and wondering what the fuck's going to happen and who's going to be alive. And like, is that me telling an exaggeration? Like, there wasn't that many times they got physical with each other. But even the fact that I got to say, well, there wasn't that many fucking times. Yeah. Like, I'm a kid. I don't know. I'm scared, and they're the people that are supposed to be protecting me, not down there scaring me.
Right. Yeah, my wife describes that as like the walking around on eggshells all the time, because you never know, you know. And it can be something you did or something not. It could be something that just happened that you had no fault in, but yet you're the brunt of the chaos. You know?
As the guy who has shown up in the world as that motherfucker, I can tell you it had nothing to do with anything except the fact that I don't feel good inside. Mm-hmm. Right? Because when I feel good inside, I don't pick everything apart all the time, and I don't do it in ways that hurt people. I just tell them when things hurt me. I'm like, hey, this, I don't like that. You know? But man, it's sad to think I spent a lot of my life hurting people so badly just because I didn't feel good. And we couldn't point to that earlier as a species. You know, somebody couldn't have pointed to me and said, dude, you don't fucking feel good and we got to help you.
Yeah.
Because that would have been great. I know this timeline. I guess there's no way to stick to a fucking timeline telling this story at all, but... So dad's depression, he didn't work again until like the early 90s, just to fill that portion of it in. So he was just kind of at the house until then, which is cool to have a parent home. I know people could sit here and tell their terrible, awful stories of how they were left alone and their parents had to work too many hours and shit, right? Latchkey kids. I didn't have to do that. That's great. Except when the guy is hypervigilant to my behavior, you know? Right. Maybe it's not so great that he's around all the fucking time. Yeah, I don't remember a ton from, like I said, before four, just what I was told. I was really tough. Apparently, I was smart. Seems to be something I was praised for, my ability to think and be logical and that kind of great stuff. That worked for a while. It got me some, you know, pats on the back and some attaboys. You know, just thinking back to like that early time that I don't remember much of, like, I don't think I met my brother until I was like 6 or 7, maybe. And it was because he was getting married and he decided he wanted to recontact my dad because they didn't talk for a long time. I don't know that whole story. I don't think it was anything my father wanted. I think he, you know, came back to that situation, and then I think the mother was bitter and moved to Arizona or something. Crazy shit.
I hate to say, most of those situations, I think now my understanding comes from fucking movies, that some of which are, I'm sure, based somewhat in truth of, like, there's probably a little bit of hesitation on everybody's part. You know what I mean? Right. The kid wants to possibly rekindle, but possibly move on. The parents feels insecure, and then the other parents bitter and angry, and it's just easier to not fucking all sit down and hash out your emotions.
Well, and by the time I met him, I'm like 7, 8, 9 years old. He's coming over with like a toddler and a baby.
Right.
Who the fuck is this dude is showing up? Right. Here's your brother.
Yeah, right.
It did get more interesting down the line with him anyway, just a little bit. but we'll get there one day. We'll get there now. It turns out later on, he went to like wrestling school and ended up wrestling in the fucking WWE, which was the WWF back then. Right. And there's all these YouTube videos of him wrestling like fucking Kevin Nash and all these big name fucking wrestlers. I'm like, and he's a nobody in the, in the wrestling industry, but like, how fucking cool, right?
Right. Yeah. Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. I know. It's neat shit. So, still don't really talk to him, but that's okay. The only thing I can really remember that stands out from like that pre-school age, I remember going to daycare across the street from me. It was like across the parking lot from my house. And there was this round circular table like you would see in any cafeteria anywhere ever that like separates, pulls apart in the middle for extra sleeves. And we were pushing it back together as a group. The kids were in the daycare. And I was on the side of it, pulling both sides together. And I was like, hey, guys, don't, you know, make sure you're real slow doing this because my stomach is going to get pinched if you're not. And, of course, we pinched my stomach. And, like, I don't know why, Billy, and I don't know if this is, like, I think this is my shit, something I need to do and adjust. But this is a very frequent fucking pattern in my life where I address a thing that I don't want to happen in the future. I talk it over with the intended parties. We all agree that we don't want it to happen and we're willing to put in the work to avoid it. And then we fucking make it happen anyway. I don't know what that is, but it keeps happening for me over and over and over again. And that's the first recollection of it happening. I know, such a weird thing. And I also remember getting caught by my dad. I was on my back porch playing show and tell with the little girls across the alley. And I got caught and like shamed around that's, you know, very normal 4 or 5 year old exploration of like, I got these parts, you got theirs. What the fuck is going on?
Right.
But yeah, you know, that kind of information wasn't really out there then. And I got to be honest, Billy, I don't fucking think people know that now either.
Yeah, it's not.
No, I think people would still fucking shame their kids about doing something like that and think something's wrong. And that's totally normal childhood behavior at that age. All right. Elementary school. We made it. God damn. Are people like tuned out yet?
Well, not to, you know, whatever, but more or less than you kind of grew up as an only child, your sister coming in and out of.
It's hard to say, right?
But she was so much older than you.
Yeah. So she was 7 years older than me. And what ends up happening, since we're getting there anyway, is around 7 or 8 years old for me, she ran away from home and accused my father of sexually touching her. And so that became a whole thing. And then I didn't see her again until I was like fucking 30 or something. Right. One of the standout memories of her being in the house was my mother was somewhere, which was unusual. Mom was always home really in the evenings. But she was out one night for some reason. And we were, me and my father and my sister were sitting in the living room watching something on TV. But the lights were out in the house for the most part. And I wanted something from the kitchen. And I asked one of them if they would go out and turn the lights on for me. And I was, I don't remember exactly how old, 4, 5, 6. And they told me no, and I better be careful walking out there because my mother was dead and hanging in the closet.
Hmm.
And that was like the joke for a minute.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, what? I'm traumatized still.
Yeah.
Like, why the fuck did you tell me that? It was awful. Oh, man. Yeah, that hurt
yeah,
me.
That's fucking weird.
Another thing that I glossed over a lot in my life and never really talked about and, you know, brought up in therapy in passing, like it wasn't that big a deal because I guess we're men and we think that sex is fine for us, even if it starts for us, you know, at age 3 months or whatever. But when I was like 4 or 5 or 6, my sister also started playing. We would play Barbies, but we started playing Barbies in a different way where the Barbies were touching each other in those areas, the bathing suit areas, you know.
Yeah.
And then it became our hands touching each other. And we did that like once or twice. And then I think she kind of grew out of it. And then I kind of like started blackmailing her to do it a couple more times. But yeah, that's the thing that I glossed over and was like, yeah, that's probably not that big a deal. And yeah. No, that's probably a fucking big deal, right. Buddy.
Well, it's, and I was the same with, you know, being molested as a kid and being like, oh, that's no big deal. I mean, it's disgusting to say it feels almost normal nowadays, but one, nobody talks about it.
Right.
And two, there wasn't really any sexual conversations between school, my parents, anyone else to kind of give you a sense of what's right or wrong,
right.
Or somebody right. telling you like, well, that really wasn't the best experience. This is what this stuff is supposed to be about. So then you're just stuck with whatever fucking narratives you start telling yourself in your own head about that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some obsessive and compulsive sexual use later in my story, right? There's some sex as a form of what we call addiction, what I call seeking relief a little too often in right. unhealthy ways. And like, could that be from that? I find in coping and relief in that early? Maybe, you know, that was a way to disappear from the real world for a couple.
Well, and we form so many of these storylines and narratives subconsciously that we take in later right. in our life right. that are just what we think is, you know, quote unquote normal. And that shit's formed in our subconscious at these early ages, these early events that imprint on us. And we don't even necessarily recognize where some of it comes from.
Right, right. So all my little 4, 5, 6-year-old body knows is something's going on. But in that moment, I'm getting attention. And
right.
it's not negative. Nobody's yelling at me or correcting me.
Right.
They're happy that I'm there and I'm being touched in a pleasurable way.
Yeah, it feels good.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been looking for that my whole life. Right. right. Like. Yeah, I mean, so how much do I associate that with love and care and, you know, being tended to?
Yeah, and I remember hearing that with my daughters of like, you know, you need to give your kids a lot of healthy touches, hugs,
right.
Holding hands, like teaching them what healthy, you know, touches are mm. because people crave, you know, touching. They
right, we need that.
Crave closeness. That's a part of human connection, to be held, to be nurtured. And if you don't get that in healthy ways, when you get it in unhealthy ways,
right.
it fucking fills right. that void. And then right. you think that's what that is.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was there. I guess I don't know what their agreement was. I think back then it was the stock 80s agreement, which was, you know, you stay with the mother and then you're at the father every other weekend,
right.
Which was probably what it was. But yeah,
hard to remember. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't.
And recount. You weren't keeping track of every
weekend.
Well,
in my mind, it wasn't like, plus I don't know summers. How much does that skew my mind?
Right.
And like, from what I remember, there was times when we expected her there or expected her to leave and it didn't happen. and I know her father was an alcoholic and abusive, mm. right? So, yeah, I'm just assuming it was a little more chaotic,
chaos.
Unpredictable, uh-huh. you know? Anyway, got to elementary school. I was a good student, but that I was programmed to please people around me, right? And make them happy. And, like, my father was so picky that I was programmed to do it pretty fucking well. I generally enjoyed school up until, like, third grade. That's when I think I can remember kids being different around me, you know, I could kind of see it in second grade, but like, I remember like kindergarten, elementary and first grade, it's just like, everybody's chill, you're learning, you're excited, you play a fucking game with a ball and y'all are in and everybody's doing it. And then, you know, you start to get those kids as you get a little older, maybe they got older siblings in their house and they're, you know, by fourth grade, they already hate school and they're tired of it. And this was in the 80s. I mean, I think all kids by fourth grade hate school now, but, you know, back then it was like the accelerated kids, right? Like maybe the kids who lived on the other side of town. And I don't know. I just remember it being different then. It was about like having the right clothes and saying the right things and being cool. And like, I was none of those things. I always got the cool thing like 3 years after it wasn't cool, you know, like the LA Gears, like way after they were the thing to do. But yeah, I remember hearing somebody say that like, it wasn't just about finding a place to fit in, because if they wanted to, they probably could have fit in with like the geeks and the nerds and shit back then. And that's how I felt too. I was like, yeah, I could have been dorky with them. That would have worked. Right. Yeah. But I wanted to be accepted by the cool people. And I don't know what that means for me.
Yeah. I still struggle with that too. Cause same thing. And I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. I don't either. I guess that's, I don't know. Maybe that's the inner critic version in my head. Right. It's what,
well, at least in looking at it, I think there's a part of that, like, oh, look, they're successful. They must feel good about themselves. Other people like them. Everybody looks up to them. Right. Like, I want to be that. I want to be the person that other people look up to. I want to be the person that looks confident, like they got it all together, like they're the fucking winner.
Well, that, and I think, so in my mind, what has happened to me in the programming of my childhood is that I was taught to be a subject, right? And the subject in the words of like a king's court, right? Back in the 1500s or something, medieval times. Like I was taught to be a person who bows to authority in my mind, because that's what it is. It's some little authority dude in my head that tells me all the rules that I'm not allowed to do what my body says I actually want to do, right? So in my mind, cool people are the fucking authority. They're the people that everybody looks to for the rules, right? That's what I think it is, but I'm not totally sure. Probably everything. So yeah, I was a pretty good student. You know, I got all the A's or E's or whatever the fuck we were getting back then. And I didn't, being a good student came easy. That's why I was a good student. It didn't take a lot of work. I didn't have to study. I was forced to do my homework as soon as I got home from school. Because that's just the way you fucking do it, you know. I remember I got into the math contest. I don't know if you remember like spelling bees, math contest and shit. So I did that in like third grade and I won at the school. So I went to the district level and I didn't win the district level, but the top three moved on. So I went to the city level and I came in second at the city level and like got this fucking... And I'm a short little dude at the time in third grade. Got this like 2.5, 3 foot trophy. So fucking proud of myself. And I walked in the door with it and told my father. And he was like, man, we're going to study and get him next year. And it's like such a crushing moment, you know. I did not participate in the math contest not the following year. I remember wanting to read a book. In like a poetry read because I thought I read with good inflection and I picked this poetry item out and like I didn't know much about it. It just sounded like the awkwardness of a kid getting older into like somewhat of a teenager, right? Like that awkward phase is what it sounded like it was talking about. So like I started practicing reading it and I told my dad I was going to read it and he was like, oh, well, you know, read it to me. Let me hear it. So I read it to him. And apparently it was like more tailored for females and like he talked me out of I don't know that he talked me out of reading it, but he definitely made me think I don't want to read this or I'm fucking made fun of. I don't know if that was helpful or harmful, right? You know, but it's a thing. It happened. Another thing I wrote down here was that like in that idea of I could have hung out with like maybe the more nerdy people. And it had to be the cool people was the idea that maybe what I was programmed for was to chase my acceptance and validation specifically from where I don't get it. You know what I mean? That's what I was like, I don't know. Is that a thing? Am I programmed to go after it where people aren't giving it? Is that why? And like the people who would give it to me, it's like, well, that's fucking stupid. You'll just give it to anybody, you know?
Yeah. I used to think that. What I've been looking at lately, because I have something sort of similar, but what I think it more has to do with now is the way that I look at and receive love, at least, or my pattern that I took from my childhood doesn't necessarily doesn't meet the need that I think it should, like, because it's so unhealthy. So it's like my relationship with my wife, like I put all these weird expectations and weird like, oh, well, you love me, so you're obviously going to not be available for me, and you're going to let me down, and you're going to do all this stuff. But these people over here that don't love me, like, if they start to give me love, then that feels good, you know? But this pattern of what I'm used to as love doesn't necessarily feel all that great. Anyway, I've been thinking about that lately. That's just something to think about. Because I used to think the same as you. I used to think, why is it that the people that I'm closest to that tell me they love me and in certain ways show me they love me, like, they don't seem to matter. Like, it's the people that don't love me that I'm seeking love and affection from. And why is that?
I think for a long time for me, it was the idea of it had to be everybody. I needed everybody to love me in order to be enough, right? There couldn't be not one person on earth that questioned
yeah, something
it.
Something to that.
Eventually realizing, I think for me at least, that that's actually just me in my head that I got to convince it's not everybody out there. But there definitely is this dynamic of like, if you already accept me, then I haven't earned anything. And my only understanding is I have to work hard and earn your love. I don't know what it's like to just be loved for being here. So it doesn't feel rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, fourth and fifth grade, I had a noticeable shift. Up until third grade, I was like the model fucking student. You would want me in any classroom ever. Every teacher would have picked me number one. Like, that was just who I was. Fourth grade, that changed a little bit. And when I say that changed a little bit, the teacher corrected me one time for talking to a student next to me in the year. But I had never had that happen before. I had never done anything wrong. But I did start to notice a different feeling inside of me when that happened. It was like, there's times I'm not the one calling the shots, and I'm going to do something, even though my brain is saying, this ain't the thing you do to be the model person that gets you all the love. And I didn't know how to stop it. That was the beginning of that. Also, fourth and fifth grade, the bullying got a little more. I had a best friend that we were best friends. I was over his house every other weekend, if not every weekend, spending the night. We played fucking Nintendo games all the time, even stupid Nintendo games like Bubble Bobble. I love Bubble Bobble, by the way. But just stuff like that, RBI baseball, trying to get one of those rob a home run moments. You know, we'll play for hours and hours. We made up games and played in his room with these little stuffed balls on the floor called hand hockey and shit, where we had goals in the doorways. Like, spent a lot of time with this motherfucker. We played wall ball and like home run derby in his back alley. And couldn't have owned it then, but know now that I was the fun time guy that we hung out all the time until the cooler kids called. And then there wasn't no space for me.
Right.
You know, but I was always scared that I would miss out on the fun that was going on at his house when I was home, you know. Couldn't have said this in these kind of words any time before now, probably, but like that was my original version, or at least my first outside of my house version of abandoning myself, right? Oh, I don't feel good about me. I'm lonely. I don't have nothing to do. I'm bored. I got to go be with him all the time. I got to think about him when I can't go be with him and be frustrated that I can't go be with him. And I should be down there and doing that. And they're probably having a lot of fun and I'm missing out. And they're all going to talk about it Monday at lunch and I won't be a part of it and I'll be excluded again. And that's my story. That's my narrative in my head.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't get in a lot of fights. I was scared. I was like paralyzed by fucking fear, right? And I don't know. I don't know how you give levels of intensity of the kind of bullying I don't know, right? I got spanked in my house. I got beat with a belt. a 2x4 one time. One time when I was older, and this made me cry the other day thinking about it, Billy. I was like 19. I mean, I wasn't a young man. Oh, I wasn't a kid. But you remember the club that people used to put on their car to make sure it didn't get stolen? Oh, yeah. I think they just gave some out in Baltimore recently.
I was going to say, they're doing a big thing, giving them out. Yeah, I just saw them.
Right. Anyway, but that was a big thing in the 80s or whatever. But and this was like 99. We still had one, apparently. I think that we had it so that I couldn't steal my parents' car. God. Which was kind of funny thinking back about it. But I had done something and stolen something else from the house again. And my father, like, choked me out with that motherfucking club, dude. Not choked me out. I didn't go out, but it fucking hurt.
Yeah, right.
Just looking back at that, like, I hadn't thought about that for a long time. For whatever reason, I thought about it this week driving to the gym, and I was like, ow. You know? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the intensity. I know I couldn't stand up for myself or speak up for what I needed. I didn't have a voice. There wasn't a space for that in my house. My father was 5'9", kind of heavy, and fucking scary as hell, basically. And, like, I just learned the best thing to do was nothing.
My mom was 5'6" and 90 pounds and scary as hell. So it isn't always, you know, size or what they look like that makes a difference. It's just feeling.
Very good point.
What's that called? Like, de-empowered or feeling like someone just takes all your power and just has all the power over you.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know if I was born just an extra sensitive, emotional person or whatever worldly words we'd like to put on that description of what kind of life my body goes through. But, like, I do always feel like I have been, like, sensitive and on the verge of tears. And, like, I put on our social media the other day, like, A minor is the soundtrack to my life, like the chord, right? And it's, if you don't know what minor chords are, they're like just kind of a little sad. And that's what my feeling of life is. It's like, yeah, it's cool, but it's kind of flavored bitterly. I don't know. I remember going to school one day, my father walking me down there, and some truck didn't stop very well at the stop sign and, like, kind of blew in front of us. And he smacked the shit out of the back of the truck. And the dude stops in the middle of the road, and they're fucking yelling at each other. And my dad tells him to meet him the fuck back up there after he drops me off at school in 10 minutes, you know, and he'll show him and this, that, and the other. And, like, I couldn't function at school that day. What the fuck happened? Is my dad alive?
Yeah, wow.
And, like, I cried when I saw him after school. And, of course, he was fucking late that day. You know? But, like, don't do that to your children.
Right. Yeah. What's funny, like, I've noticed, at least as a parent, and I'm better at it now, it's like we expect our kids to understand, like, sarcasm and nuance and all these things when they're young because that's how we operate, but they don't understand any of that shit. Like, so much stuff to them is literal, or they're still trying to work some of those ideas out, you know? So when we say things, you know, and I can remember saying, like, crazy shit to my kids, like, oh, I should just go punch that fucking guy in his face. You know, like, they don't understand that I'm not probably going to do that. That's not something I'm going to do. I'm just saying that because I'm angry and that's what I want to do.
I absolutely hopped out of my motherfucking car.
Yeah.
On some fucking teenagers who were being assholes to me. Yeah. But still, like, as an adult, whipped my fucking kids in the car.
I just did it like a year ago with my son at Walmart. And I told him, and I really wasn't. I said, I wasn't getting out of the car to fight the guy. He fucking flipped out on me. He was in the wrong. I don't know what was going on. And so he wanted to stop his car in front of me. So I stopped my car and got out. And then he took off. So my son's like, were you going to get out and fight him? I was like, no, I wasn't planning to fight him.
What the fuck were you planning on then? If you get out, you're planning on fighting, Billy. Just letting you know. Don't get out unless you are.
Yeah.
Because somebody else getting out there ready for that. So I didn't get out with the intention to fight. I got out with the intention to intimidate.
Yeah.
Not any better.
No.
Angry, dude. I'm not in control of myself. Like those moments in school. I can't do that thing that my brain is saying I want to do. No fucking control over it. I learned later that's my nervous system overwhelming me. Nobody taught me that. You know, this is shit that I don't know. I honestly have no idea if I've ever told anybody this, Billy. I'm gonna share about it here, honestly, because of your bravery, talking about your sexual abuse and stuff when you were younger. And fuck it, we need to change the world and have a different narrative and be able to talk about this shit. But I can remember in elementary school having a group of a couple of guys that we played weird truth or dare games with each other and shit around, you know, touching genitals and stuff. I don't know, man. I don't know if that was normal for every kid. We did some of that shit. I don't know that it matters.
I think it is. So I had a similar experience, and what was weird about mine, so a similar experience happened, and I freaked the fuck out, but I think I freaked out because I had been sexually abused as a kid. Mm-hmm. So when these couple of kids, there was a sleepover at a guy's, and it's a very similar type of thing, and we were probably, I'm going to say between 8 and 10. I don't remember exactly what age, but 8 and 10. And, you know, they had brought up and they wanted to play. And I was like, I'm fucking sick. I need to go home. Ooh. And I freaked out and I went to the, and I was like, I never like told anybody or got anybody in trouble or anything like that. Or I just was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. But it was, you know, those kids had all done that. And it was four or five kids there. And that's what was about to happen. And I just, like say for being sexually abused. So I think some of that's normal. Right, you're a kid. Right. There's normal sexual exploration. But again, all that shit, there's so much shame and unwillingness to talk about it or unwillingness to
I think something's wrong with me because all the messaging in the world is that being homosexual at that point in time in life in the '80s is wrong. It's fucking wrong. And you're a lesser person for it.
Yeah.
And here I am saying, well, I'm doing stuff like that. We're playing truth or dare. We're playing the, hey, I'm asleep, but if somebody, you know, wanted to like pet me, it's cool kind of game, right? And nobody's there to say, hey, that's normal. So all y'all dudes around my age that played that game, there you are. You're normal. Nothing's wrong with you. Or we're all fucking weird together either way.
Yeah. We're just growing up with so much shame around like sex in general. Right. Like, oh, I don't know. Anything besides like
purity.
Oh, yeah. Like straight, you know. One man, one woman, like what do they call that? Missionary, like that's it. Anything else is fucking weird or you're a pervert. Or
we put a sheet between us and cut a hole for the actual interaction, right? Our skin can't touch.
Every now and again, we push them together. But yeah, and it's, you know, it's just, since nobody, as when you're young, wants to have real conversations about that stuff, there's all this shame and all this guilt. And I think that's where a lot of this, you know, unhealthiness around sex and why internet porn is so crazy. Yes. It's like, because people can't be open about it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Thinking about like that transition period of like going from elementary school to middle school. I didn't go to the middle school that was in my neighborhood where all the other kids basically from elementary school went. It was in my town becoming a rougher middle school. And they didn't have any kind of like advanced placement or education programs. And so I don't know what happened, but somehow I got sent somewhere else where it was further away, but it was a nicer school. I got bullied by nicer kids who didn't bully me as bad, I guess. I don't know. Probably a good thing, but it was a weird time to like kind of be saying bye to this one set of friends and like moving into some this other world, you know. The people I had grown up with, it was freeing for me in a lot of ways because like I knew those weren't really good friends for me anyway. I was mostly just kind of like the low man on the totem pole in the group, but still like, you know, damn, I'm moving away from these people that I've spent the last 6 years of my childhood with, and the only people I really know in the world, that is my world. These people, I go see them at school every day, you know? But even then, measuring up in some of our last interactions, talking about like, they're talking about things that are beyond me. I'm like trying to walk around with them over the summer and they've done hung out with the older kids and they're informed about sex and like no songs that have curse words and like, you know, are masturbating and it works and they know how to do it. And I'm like 11 and fucking stupid to the world and feeling not enough and less than again, you know, just another story in my mind of my life. So yeah, the whole thing with my sister, that was weird. She left, ran away, accused my father of touching her inappropriately. There was an investigation. People came and talked to me. I had to learn all the gluteus maximus terms and shit to talk to them fancy. And, you know, nothing ever came of it. I actually do think my father grabbed her titty or something, honestly. I don't know what difference it makes at this point. I'm sure it makes a difference for one of them too, maybe. Just a weird thing to go through. Another fucking stressful situation of like, do these people have the ability to take my parents away from me or me away from my parents in this situation? And like, I don't know. I'd have probably fucking lied to avoid that if I had to, you know? But then remembering like as I went into middle school one day, a couple years later, coming home from school, she like pulled up in a car full of people, my sister. And like got out and hugged me and said she was sorry for, and like this is what was weird at the time, like she was like apologizing and I couldn't completely understand this for like abandoning me. And I didn't get it,
right?
And I get it now. I was in a fucking abusive household. Like she was my protection. I was the golden child until she left. She was the fucking bad kid, right? But then shit started all getting put on me.
Right, you were the only one there.
Right. And like I didn't get it then, but yeah, she got out. I'm sure her situation did not get better, Billy.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know, it was an interesting thing. And then I remember telling my parents about it and like she gave me her number and I remember them having mixed feelings about it, like very mixed feelings, because on one hand, it's like it is my sister and it would be nice to keep in touch. But on the other hand, like she's using drugs and hanging out with people that should not be around me. That's probably not a good idea.
Right.
So that's probably confusing. Other memories is loving music, but loving like adult love songs. Like Rush Rush by Mariah Carey or Paula Abdul.
I don't know if I know that. I mean, I know if I heard
but like
it,
any really heartfelt, emotional, right, like adult love song. And all I can think about now is that that's what I was sold by the world. That was going to be my solution. That was my magical solution as a kid for all the pain I was feeling. That was somebody was going to come along and they were going to love me so right that it was just going to all make sense. You know, that didn't exactly happen. Actually, it kind of did happen. It's just me. I came along and I'm loving me right. God damn it. And there was another key point of like, we were going to go to the state fair this one year. And there was this huge fucking blowout argument between my mom and my dad. And like, I was the voice of reason in the house. I was the one crying, saying, can't we just sit down and talk about this like adults? And we did. And my father ended up not going. And like, you know, me and my mom went. But like, how the fuck at 8 years old am I the one being the voice of reason in the house? You know, that parentified child role that I had to take on, taking care of my parents' emotions. And how that fucked me up for the rest of my life. Middle school. So I went to this other middle school. It was pretty much more of the same. Different versions of bullying. I was in Boy Scouts. There was more bullying there, of course. It felt like these people just kept showing up. Like I would go to these spaces to get freedom from it. And then these like bullyish type people. And it's weird because one at school and one in Boy Scouts were cousins. With the same last name, but different people. But yeah, like they just kept invading my world and like ruining the places where I enjoyed myself.
Wow.
But Boy Scouts was the thing that like I probably would have quit at that point, especially with somebody there that really made it miserable. And I didn't ever feel like I could.
Now, did you play sports or anything growing up?
I did play sports. That's right. I didn't mention that. I played soccer, outdoor and indoor soccer, and then basketball and baseball. And I was fucking awful at baseball, batting. I was scared. I was terrified to bat, Billy. People were throwing that fucking ball at me. That's hard.
Yeah.
So I was awful at batting. Struck out or walked, basically, every time at bat. I was decent defensively for the most part. I had a glove. I wasn't as scared of the ball. Like, and I kind of was ready for it to come at me, you know?
Right.
Different scenario there. But yeah, soccer, I was decent at. I look at the kids my son plays against now, and like the skill level in America has come a long way.
Right.
I don't think I'd be that good now, but like back then I was like a fucking superstar running around everybody. But yeah, sports quickly just became another spot where it could be hypercritical about, oh my God, you got a hat trick this game, but here's how you missed the other six goals you should
have.
I just
wondered for the bullying. So I've always kind of had a theory, and apparently not, that like, oh, if you play a lot of sports, you don't really get bullied because you in a team and there's a camaraderie. And
you're the dude who strikes out with all the players on base. You always get bullied, Billy.
Yeah.
And because I was good at soccer, the other kids on the other teams that were the cool kids in town would be like be extra rough against me in the games because they didn't like me. Mm. Basically, Hamden felt like it was all a bunch of cousins and me. Like everybody was fucking related and lived next to people. And my parents came from like some other part of town and just moved there. And I had no ties to the neighborhood. So I was the outcast.
Gotcha.
And I'm sure just being me, I don't know. I'm a guy that's different. And like being me tends to be pointed at by others, I guess. Maybe that's another story in my head. I don't know. Middle school, definite downward spiral of grades, like lost the ability to do homework. I just could not force myself, no matter how much I knew my parents would be upset about the report cards and what the punishment would be. And that's what I think it's funny that we can't understand about punishment. Like, I know I don't want that fucking punishment that's coming for that thing, and I still can't.
Right.
Why can't parents see that? I can't as a kid. You have to fucking help me somehow. And punishment ain't helping. Eventually got to the place where I skipped school towards the end. Only one day. Me and my buddy skipped and went and like fucking played in a sewer somewhere and crawled around and explored the sewer drains and thankfully didn't get flooded and die. But yeah, that like things, the rules started to become less my rules. Or I felt less inclined that to be able to follow them. I think I've shared on here before that I like took a broken glass bottle before school one day and cut my arms up and went into class and like they just told me to go to the my teacher told me to go to the bathroom and wash it up. I was like, and I don't remember what excuse I gave, but like something seems wrong here if I got dried blood all over my arms while I'm in class.
That's crazy.
I started like rolling up dried leaves out front of school and smoking them. It was almost like these ways of trying to be cool or get attention or be seen. And I don't say that in a negative light. Like I needed some fucking attention and I wasn't getting it for just being ho-hum ass Jason. Honestly, like I needed some extra shit. And these were the things that my body felt pulled to do. I don't know why.
Yeah. And it's interesting with the rules thing. Cause I, and even now I'm still a person that like, I'm a rule follower. I'm a rule follower, but as I got to this age you're talking about, I started hanging around. Like what I got attracted to is the cool kids were all the kids that broke the rules, that were doing whatever the fuck they wanted and fuck authority and all that. And when I started using, that's what I gravitated towards and appealed to. Like that felt so freeing than being like stuck into all these rules that I didn't even like.
You know why? Because that is freeing for our soul to live our fucking life, right? Like, that's fucking I still want that. That's
what I was doing horrible things. We were, like, vandalizing people's property and stealing cars and, like, doing drugs. And, like, it was all bad that I knew was fucking wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, oh, we were just whatever. Like, you talked about ditching school. Like, we ditched school all the time to the point they're like, if you miss another day of school, you're going to fail. Like you can't miss any more days of school, you know?
Right.
And like my parents' house was the house because both my parents worked. We ditched school and went to my house raided the liquor cabinet.
Had a buddy like y'all.
We were that house.
So I still think those people are cool. They're still the people that are living by their own rules and they are free. They're not living this life of, I'm not trying to compare it to slavery, indentured servitude. Like we are forced to do these rules. I didn't agree to that. Fuck them rules. Right. So anyway, I still think that's cool, but I think what you're saying, things that are bad, I think they are fucking statements about what the world is doing wrong and how we're ass backwards. Right. Oh, that farm equipment is more important than me and my life. Fuck that farm equipment. I'll defile it. You know, if you put stuff as more important than life, I will break your stuff. Right. It makes sense to me. I don't know. I can't be too mad at people who do that.
And at that age, for a lot of us looking back now, at least a lot of the kids I hung around with, and for me, it was a point of like crying out for help.
Yeah.
Like we are hurting. you know, I've joked with Jen about this now. Like, I still have points. It's terrible to say. So we're like walking through Home Depot the other day, or, you know, big box store, and a guy's got this, you know, cart on it, and he's got a couple of the fake like Christmas trees all lined up, and like I'm walking by and I just want to kick all that shit all over the fucking floor and walk, you know, just like I just want you to fucking fuck your shit up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I just want to make you I want to make you hurt like I feel like I hurt, or yes. I want to make you recognize that what you think is stable and secure in your life can be like just totally fucking fucked up in like 8 seconds, and someone else is going to laugh at you. Like, dude, that's such a weird feeling to walk around with.
You love to do that though?
So I don't love to do it. I don't actually do it.
Right.
Oh, but I would like to.
Yes, but I feel
like... Or
the
impulse is there. I
feel like knowing that that's what satisfies you, you should go and be a Zen priest. Dave always talks about that's exactly what his mentor does for him, is pulls the fucking rug out from under him at every turn. Like, we can please you, Billy.
Yeah.
That's funny. We did, when I was working in high school at a summer camp for Boy Scouts, we used to drive around the local place and steal people's lawn ornaments and then come put them in our campsite. So I had like some swan planters and shit that I ended up taking back to my parents' house. Sorry, little town around Broad Creek. But it was fun.
But some of that stuff as a kid that age is normal, I think. Some it's when it gets
mischief.
To the unhealthy
I like mischief.
Parts of it. Yeah.
I'm a fan of mischief personally.
Yeah.
You know. Nothing that harms things, but yeah, mischief.
Right.
I get it. Maybe you can say the fucking swan plant holders harm somebody because they didn't get them back, but like, get over it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
Have you found that listening to the Recovery Sort Of podcast has helped you in your day-to-day journey? Please share the message of compassion and well-being with the loved ones in your life. Connect with us more at recoverysortof.com, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, and other social media spaces. And have a great week.